You are now tuned in to My Skin Is My Sin on Blog Talk Radio. From goons to gods, we welcome everyone. We only have one rule. Let's be respectful. You are now tuned in to My Skin Is My Sin on Blog Talk Radio. Goons to gods, we welcome everyone. We only have one rule. And that's be respectful.
Call us next week, man.
No doubt, no doubt, man. And definitely shout out to the family, liberationmindedmedia.net. That is Black Eyes Stan, Do the Knowledge Radio, The Rundown with Renee, and My Skin Is My Sin. Oh, and don't forget to share the show, man. If you check it out today, or if you check it out next week, or if you check it out in 1,000 years, and if you are that motherfucker that digs us up in 1,000 years, you are the most phenomenal individual to ever walk the galaxy for digging up this greatness and still share our shit, man. Shout out to you. Don't forget to check out the websites, mrochelle.com, designsbymonet.com, and myskinismysin.net.
What's good, fam? This is Jobs, and you are tuned in to My Skin Is My Sin on Blog Talk Radio. From goons to gods, we welcome everyone. We only have one rule, and that's be respectful. Man, we are humbled, honored, privileged, and wow, just astonished that we have such greatness joining the conversation tonight. This king has hit 120 countries, either lectured or presented in 65, worked with some of the most distinguished scholars of our generation. And I'm reading off of his bio because y'all know I'm trash at the introductions, and he deserves the greatness, all the greatness that the world has to offer. Historian, anthropologist, just master teacher, Dr. Runoko Rashidi, man. Welcome to the platform. How you doing, King?
I'm good, brother. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm glad to be here. How's your family? Everybody okay?
Well, everybody's okay. Everybody's okay. An opportunity to get away from the lectures for a moment and regroup. I have a lecture in Sacramento on Sunday, then the next week in San Diego, and then I fly to Europe and the Nile Valley for about 2 months. So things are okay.
Man, that's a beautiful life. That is it. And I want to say thank you, too, and I'm proud of you, King.
Oh, well, thank you. What shall we chat about?
Well, I know we're going to talk about the history of Africa before slavery. I wanted people, if they want to get in contact with you, they want to do a tour, anything of that nature, can you let them know how they do that first and foremost, though?
A person can call me after the show, 323-803-8663. That's 323-803-8663. But email always works best, and that would be runoko@hotmail.com. My name is spelled R-U-N-O-K-O, so that's runoko@hotmail.com. And, you know, you could always go to my website, which is drrunoko.com, D-R-R-U-N-O-K-O.com. That's the best way to reach me.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. So the history of Africa before slavery. Let me preface this statement by saying, man, I'm not the smartest cat in the world. I'm going to be honest with you. And I had to look up a lot of things just to make sure I didn't sound too stupid tonight. But where do you start? Like, that's such a vast, you know, a time span. Like, where do we start when we talk about the history of Africa before slavery?
I think when we talked the last time or the first time, it was in the airport in Cleveland. A sister, I think Sister Koya,
absolutely
connected us, and we talked about, we kind of introduced ourselves and mentioned what we might discuss. And I think we decided that since there's a lot of attention, at least in some circles, being put on the year 1619, when Africans, captured Africans, were landed in Jamestown, Virginia. A lot of, you know, emphasis on that, the 400 years. And so I think that we both agreed that what we wanted to do is to make clear to people that our history didn't start with slavery. And
absolutely.
That if you start with slavery, you'll end up a good slave because you are kind of mentally conditioned to slavery and servitude. So we decided we wanted to go back and look at Africa itself, where we came from rather than where we got dropped off. And we wanted to look at Africa as the birthplace of humanity. That's the original birthplace of humanity. Black people, African people, are the parent people of everybody else. I mean, it started in Africa, and those Africans went all over the world before enslavement. And then you have Africans who developed, I guess you could even say invented, what we call civilization, the first great cities and towns and villages, the use of metal weapons and tools, agriculture, I mean, writing, astronomy, science, mathematics, all of that started in Africa. And these are the things that I think people need to know, may not necessarily want to know, but need to know, because knowledge itself is, you know, you can't disconnect it from the person that you are and how you see the world. Here's a simple way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
What you do for yourself depends on what you think of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And what you think of yourself depends on what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends on what you have been told. So if you are told you ain't nothing and you come from nothing, you'll act that out. You know, if you think you come from greatness, from royalty, kings and queens, you'll act that out. Because I know a lot of people, particularly young people, seem to question why we need to know what happened yesterday, why we need to study history, why we need to be aware of what once was. And it's really, really basic. You don't find white folks asking that question. They shove it down your throat. They're always talking about the Titanic and George Washington and Lincoln and Einstein and Shakespeare. I mean, you never hear them say history is unimportant. It was a long time ago. It's irrelevant. Julius Caesar, Alexander the Great, Aristotle, Plato, Napoleon, you name it. Well, even though the names are bad, white people, we've all heard of Al Capone. You've even heard of Count Dracula and Jack the Ripper. And yet black folk will tell you history's not important. I don't need that. And this is where I think we fall down. I believe, and I don't mean to preach, but I think that if we had a better sense of our history, it would mean we would have a greater sense of respect for ourselves and the people in our community. And this is what we have to get over. Not easy, because a lot of folks have shut it down. Like you close your mind, like you close a window or a door for fear that new information might come in. So we have to find a way to open that door and get that information in there. And I think that that's what you're doing in your own way, you know, through the media and Blog Talk Radio. So that's why I'm here.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that, too. And before we really delve into it, I got a question, though. Do you have, like a mentee, somebody that, you know, that when you want to hang it up, you feel comfortable will be able to carry the torch?
Not to the extent that I'd like to.
Okay.
One of the reasons for that is because I'm not at a university. You know, we're dealing with social media for the most part. And I find it difficult to really develop serious relationships like that. Quite often you don't get to see the person. You know, you communicate with them over a keyboard or through YouTube or Skype or something of that nature. And it's kind of impersonal.
Right.
So to have confidence in somebody, to really feel like there's somebody so special that you're going to pass on whatever little wisdom you think you have, it's not always easy to develop that level of confidence. And that's, you know, I guess why I need to do the most work, because I'm 65 now. I don't want to take it with me. I want to leave it behind so that other future generations can build on it.
That's interesting. I know somebody that was interested. They kind of wanted me to ask that. I like that too, man. And I'm kind of one of those people that you were speaking on. Well, I was for I'm 47. So for a great majority of my life, I was one of those people that kind of really want to hear about that. You know, how does that affect me right now? It didn't help me pay my light bill. And then I matured you know, and I started becoming interested. I just learned differently. I'm not an avid reader. How do we capture people like myself who want to learn but aren't necessarily the classical, learner, if that makes sense?
I think what we have to find a way to do is instill the desire to learn. Now, something happened to you. I don't know if it was just evolution or maturity or just a process that took time. A lot of people never learn. A lot of people never grow and evolve, and a lot of people never develop that interest. Now, what I try to do in my presentations, and obviously you can't do it over the radio, at least not yet, but what I try to do in my presentations is to be very visual. I show spectacular photographs, many of which are pictures that I've taken myself from around the world. I think people respond to, especially in our community, I think that people respond to visual images more than just words. And if you're able to combine words and imagery, I think you really got something going on. You know, you can see the impact of things like Hidden Colors, but you can also see the impact of films like Black Panther. That really tapped into a lot of our souls, a desire to want to identify with something larger than ourselves, you know, a pride in Africa, pride in our roots, respect for black women. You didn't see any of them with, all of them had natural hair, which I love. A young sister who was a scientist, you know, black relationships that were very positive. They never used the N word. They never used the B word. And that is one of the biggest box office hits of all time. So I think that really tapped into something. And maybe the most tender, the most touching part of the whole film was when Killmonger was dying and they bonded. You know, he wanted to see the sunset go over Africa. I think that in our community among African Americans, there's a lot of hurt. And there's a lot of pain that a lot of us are not prepared to acknowledge or recognize because we're too tough for that. But we are deeply wounded people, men and women. And somehow we have to find a way to come to grips with that. It's going to take time, but we have some real healing to do. And a lot of times you don't know. I almost used another set of language, but I catch myself.
Talk how you want to.
You know, we are very fucked up in a lot of ways. I mean, really fucked up. Yeah. I'll give you an example. I started traveling to Africa in 1991. But it wasn't until the year 2000 that I went to a place in Africa outside of Egypt. All my early trips were to Egypt, and Egypt is spectacular. I'm going again next month. And then I went to southern Africa in a country called Namibia, and also Zimbabwe. And I gave a bunch of presentations in front of a lot of people, in many cases dignitaries. And every time I would be given a talk, I would get very emotional in the process. And I talk about these dreams I used to have and the nightmares, really. And there were, I would be in my neighborhood somewhere, but I could never find my home. Or I would come to visit my family in Los Angeles where I grew up, and they wouldn't want me to be with them. And I realized at that time, in front of all these thousands of people in Africa at a podium, that those dreams had a much greater significance than I ever realized. And that because we were separated and taken from our homes, where do I come from? I think that's why this Ancestry.com thing is so big, because people are trying to find their roots. And then because we were separated from our families, I think that there's a fear of relationships and being hurt again and being separated and all of that. And the audience would say, but Renoko, this is your home, and we are your family. You know, I never had those dreams anymore after that. It was as though I had to be in that situation for those demons to be exercised. And I think that all of us, whether we are aware of it or not, have demons that come from a brutal history of enslavement, colonization, rape, family separation, dehumanization, brutality in every way. And it's deeply instilled in our psyche, and we have to find a way to heal. And I think embracing our history, developing a knowledge of our culture, I think, is the surest antidote for that. But we have to push people in the right direction. We have to be incredibly patient, something that I am not. A lot of us, when we develop a little bit of consciousness, we think we start to look down on the very people that we used to be just like. We make fun of people who we say are not woke. And we realize that all of us had to wake up at some point in time. So we must be very, very, very patient. And it's going to take generations, and we have to prepare ourselves for that. That's just the way it is.
I agree wholeheartedly. So let me ask you this. What's the first great African civilization?
Oh, we have to talk about Egypt. Of course, you have others like there's one called Tassetti, and sometimes the Greeks use the word Ethiopia. But if you really want to talk about African civilization, in terms of ancient African civilization especially, you got to go to the Valley of the Nile. You got to go to Egypt, and you have to remember, we have to remind folk that Egypt is in Africa, and it's always been in Africa. If you don't know any better, you would think Egypt is in the Near East or the Middle East, and it has nothing to do with it, but Egyptian civilization was an African civilization. I think we can probably say the greatest and the one that lasted the longest, and that's why so many people are trying to steal it.
Yeah, man, they've been doing that for, thousands of years? I don't know.
Thousands of years, but a couple of hundreds of years anyway. Now, Egypt has had many invaders. The people who occupy Egypt today are largely Arabs who were not there when the pyramids were built. But the idea that Egypt is not African is about 200 to 240 years old. Napoleon went to Egypt in 1798, and from that point, Egypt began to be looked upon by Europeans as out of Africa, and they began to develop ideas that even if it is in Africa physically, black people were so primitive, black people were so without civilization that they could not have built the pyramids. So they began to say that dark-skinned white people came to Egypt and built that civilization. And unfortunately, that's what most people, I think, believe now, including a lot of black folk.
Yeah, yeah. That's always been kind of like the only thing on my bucket list is to literally see the pyramids.
Thanks. You ought to do it, man. And I don't say put it on your bucket list. You should make it a priority. I wish every black person, every African-American, could go to Africa at least once. Any part of Africa. I mean, Egypt is special. But any part of Africa, because believe me, it can be transformative. People like Richard Pryor, you might remember the old comedian. He's an ancestor. He went to Africa. He stopped using the N-word. I mean, you begin to see yourself in a different light. And we need to get over this thing we hear about those Africans don't like you. They look down on you. They don't think you. That's just foolishness, man. When you go to the motherland, especially some countries, you will be embraced and you will feel at home. And you won't hear a helicopter flying above your head. And you won't hear a case of a brother who had his arms up in the air, hands up in the air in broad daylight saying, "Don't shoot," being shot by a cop, or a brother who's shot in his own apartment. You don't hear about things like that. It's less stressful. So one of the keys is to get comfortable with Africa. And I don't want to hear you put yourself down anymore. You took the time to study. You took the time to research. We're all growing. We're all students. We're just at different levels. So don't be so hard on yourself. Some people never wake up. Some people stay in the darkness all of their lives. So you're on a journey. I'm on a journey. And it looks like we're both heading in the same direction. And that's a good thing. There's an old African proverb. If you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together.
That's real right there. That's definitely real. And I don't know if I got the name, the Zanj, or the largest revolt of slavery in history. Where did that take place?
Oh, that's an excellent question. The largest revolt of enslaved people would have been Iraq. and it's called The Revolt of the Zans. The Zans were African people who were captured in the motherland, mostly East Africa, and taken to Asia. Not all the captured Africans were taken to the Americas. Some were taken to Asia. And you have a group from East Africa who came to be called Zanj. And this particular group was settled in southern Iraq. And they were treated very, very harshly. And they had three massive insurrections. And the biggest one was from 868 to 883. And it's called the Revolt of the Zanj, or the Revolt of the Blacks. It lasted for almost 15 years. And some of these sisters and brothers actually marched on Baghdad. So this is the largest revolt that I'm aware of in history. A lot of them never lost their freedom, and it shook up the entire Arab world. So if we're going to talk about slavery, if we're going to talk about enslavement, I think that we should also spend some time talking about resistance to enslavement.
All right, so I just built the magic time machine, and you get the opportunity to go back to 1 year in history. What year would that be?
Of course, I would have to go back to ancient Egypt. I'd have to go back to the Nile Valley, let's say, before it was polluted by invaders. Maybe the time of the Great Pyramids, or maybe during what's called the 12th Dynasty. This would be about 4,000 years ago. And this is my favorite historical period and my favorite dynasty. Now, a dynasty in Egypt is a family of rulers. One member of the family coming after the other for an extended period of time. So when we talk about dynastic Egypt, we're talking about the time of the pharaohs. We're talking about from around 5,100 years ago until just over 2,300 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the 12th dynasty would be from around 3,900 years ago to about 3,700 years ago. This is a classical era of writing, a classical era of a high point in art, very, very stable, very strong family structures at that time. So if I was going to go back in time, that would be the time. But there are other periods in our history. For example, we could go to another part of Africa. We could go to, let's say, ancient Mali. I think a lot of us have heard of Timbuktu. Well, Timbuktu was the capital of ancient Ghana, and then Mali, and then Songhai. And Mali is ruled at its height by a man named Mansa Musa, Mansa Kankan Musa. And Musa is the same as Moses. Mansa means emperor or sultan. And this is the great empire of West Africa that ruled... That scholars came from all over the world to go and attend university and go and teach there. So there are many phases in African history that we can look back upon and we can be very, very proud of. I'm not saying we are able to ignore enslavement. Obviously not. It's an important part of our history. But it's not the beginning of our history. And it's not the totality of our history.
Now, there was somebody in Mansa Musa's family before him, if I remember correctly. I can't remember his name.
Did
he abdicate the throne?
Very good, brother. I'm impressed. Mansa Musa's immediate predecessor is a man named Abubakar II. And now, all of these brothers were Muslims. Mansa Musa was a particularly devout Muslim. And one of the most historic things that he did was he took the pilgrimage to Mecca, and he brought with him so much gold and gave away so much gold that the value of gold was really diminished for a long time. Now, his predecessor was a Muslim, too, a man named Abubakar II, but he wasn't so much interested in going on the Hajj and going on the pilgrimage to Mecca. Apparently, he was very interested in what lay beyond the sea. And when I say the sea, in this case, I'm talking about the Atlantic Ocean. And so he built a fleet of ships, apparently two fleets of ships. And on the last ship, I mean on the with the last voyage, he himself got on a ship, and he was never seen or heard from again. So that is the predecessor of Mansa Musa, and probably this represents one of a series of visitations to the Americas by Africans at least 200 to 300 years before Columbus.
So who was the first?
Well, we don't know what the first one is. We do know that the first people of the Americas had African features. They may have been black folk from what looks like Aboriginal Australians, or they may have been from the continent of Africa. But they had the features of black people. We know this based on skeletal remains that were found in Brazil in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. They nicknamed the most prominent skeleton Lucia, after Lucy. And this is 11,000 years old. And then you have Africans who come to the Americas in ancient times and impact classical civilization. The greatest of these civilizations is called the Olmec civilization. And the Olmec civilization is important to us because it's the primary civilization, the parent civilization of the Western Hemisphere. I mentioned that black people, Africans, are the parent people of humanity, but we are also the parents of civilization. And what stands out most about the Olmec civilization are these massive stone heads, 20 of them that have been excavated in Mexico, all with the features of African people. And then you have the voyage of Abubakar II and probably many, many other voyages. When the conquistadors came to the Americas, Columbus and Balboa, those two stand out. They talked about the black people that they either saw or black people that they heard about from their discussions with Native Americans. And so these are things that we should know. Just like we know the names and deeds of athletes and entertainers, who scored how many touchdowns, who threw so many passes, who hit a home run, who dunked the ball the most, who had the most rebounds, what the latest rap song is, what Beyonce said or Cardi B or whatever. Just like we know the names of these sisters and brothers. Yeah, I'm an old man. Just like we know the name of these sisters and brothers, we need to know the names of our great heroes. Black people that we can take pride in, black people that we can point to our children and say, you need to be like that person. This person is a role model for you. Somebody that lived before slavery, or somebody that fought against slavery, or somebody who was able to do great things in spite of slavery. So this is the kind of history that we need to be talking about, because this history will liberate your mind and not further enslave you.
Oh, and I'm not sure how long we got the king with us tonight, but if you do have a question or a comment, the number is 347-855-8692, and you press 1, so I know you want to get on air. But we got a lot of people tuned in, man. You got a lot of love out there. Like, I was like, oh, and speaking of the big brick head, you got a really dope picture next to that, too. I'm into photography. That's a really dope picture. I thought that was beautiful.
Well, it's not brick, but it is made of stone. And these heads, these are the Olmec heads that I'm talking about. Now, if you have a link or something or a page and people are interested, perhaps I can post some of these pictures.
Absolutely.
But some of these heads, yeah, one of these heads weighs up to 100,000 pounds. And these heads are thousands of years old. So to me, these are things that we can really get excited about. I'll tell you something else very important in our history. It's very important. Mm-hmm. And that is the role of black women in our history. Mm. Just outstanding. Queens, and also sometimes kings. Warrior women. You know, in many cases, God was portrayed in the form of a black woman. So our sisters need to hear these things. Sisters, black women need to hear this. And they need to hear it from black men who love them and admire them and respect them and don't attach any strings to it. Not just trying to get over, but saying these things because they are true. So history can bring about a better relationships in our community, healthy relationships. And we need those things because our communities right now are in disarray. We're doing all kind of crazy things to each other.
Yeah.
White folks don't have to do it because they programmed us to do it. When I hear about all these homicides in Chicago and all these other cities, I live in South Central L.A., and I grew up in that. I grew up with the Crips, In fact, one of the people that I went to high school with was Tookie Williams, who was the co-founder of the Crips. And later on, when he was on death row, I edited a book of his. So I know what it's like to live in a black community. I know what it's like to have violence around you, to be you know, to feel threatened by racist cops. I know what that's like. You know, I didn't grow up with a silver spoon. My mother was a nurse's aide. So we had life tough. And so I'm saying that if we had this knowledge of self, this sense of pride in black women, respect for black women, respect for ourselves, and understanding that we can achieve so much if we put our minds to it and stay focused, hey, we can change the world, man. And
so,
we're going to.
So you've always been this interested in our people, or was there a moment for you?
Yeah, there was a moment for me. But fortunately, I guess it was fortunate, it occurred at a young age. I grew up in L.A., South Central L.A., and I grew up right around the end of the time of what we call the Black Power Movement. And the Civil Rights Movement was in full swing. And we had at that time what was called Negro history classes. Yeah, literally Negro history classes. And I took one of these classes, and I was transformed. I listened to the speeches of Malcolm X, and I was just transformed dramatically. I was like 14. And then I started reading in high school Marcus Garvey. I guess a lot of people have heard of the great Marcus Garvey. And then when I attended the university, I came under the influence of a brother named Kwame Ture. And I read a book called Destruction of Black Civilization by Chancellor Williams, and I was transformed. So that was a pivotal time from the time I was about 14 to the time I was about 18. That was the transformative period. From the time I was very young, I liked to read. I was very nerdy, so I was always reading comic books or baseball cards or science fiction. So I liked to read, and so it was easy to me to make the transition from comic books and Marvel and stuff into reading about my history. And once I started doing it, brother, I was lost. That was it. That's all I wanted to do. And that's been 45 years ago. Yeah.
Wow.
So you could just about say I got from the time you were in diapers, I was researching. From the time you were a toddler, I was researching African history. And I've never really looked back. I mean, it's wonderful to be able to travel and see the world and to have pride in yourself. Brother, you can't put a price on that. So I love what I do, but I want to do it better. And as you say, I need to find more people to pass the information along to. So I spend a lot of time on social media. I spend a lot of time on Facebook, and I disseminate a lot of information like that. We're Facebook friends, though.
Yeah, we are. And let me get my co-host, who's fashionably late, by the way, Roman, on the conversation. But I think I may have somebody for you, too, because we have a brother that comes on every Thursday for about 5 minutes, about 8 o'clock, and he's been to, like, 60. I think we talked about him. But he's been to, like, 60 countries. And so I wanted the young kids to be able to hear, you know, how dope it is to leave your neighborhood, not only leave your neighborhood, but your country, and go see the world. You know, so I think he might be interested. Rome, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man. What's going on?
And we got the king in the building, man, Dr. Rashidi.
Please, Dr. Rashidi, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, brother. You know, I mean, I appreciate that, man, but I'm just a hardworking historian. You can call me Dr. Rashidi, or you can call me Brother Rinoco. A lot of people call me Baba Rinoco. But I'm not. You don't have to call me the king, brother. I appreciate that. But I'm a student. And it's a pleasure to interact with you all, and I hope that we can build a good relationship.
Yeah, man, that would be dope. I was intimidated, to be quite honest, about you coming on the show. And not that we haven't had intelligent people on the show before, we have. But you just have such a presence. And I even told Koya, and shout out to her for the plug, but I even told her, I was like, you know, I think I'm too dumb to interview this cat. And
don't even go there, man.
I'm just being honest, but you have changed that. You have, just in this brief time, you made me feel a lot better.
Well, then that's good. You see,
yes,
it's one thing. Hear me on this now. It's one thing not to know. We can change that. You know, we can fill an empty cup. The problem is people who don't want to know, people who don't want to hear that stuff. That's the problem. You know, that's the problem. We have to make it interesting. We have to make people want to know who they are and what they've done. And once you start that process, it can be very exciting. It can be transformative. A lot of people don't want to know because with knowledge comes responsibility. And it means you may have to change the way you see the world. It may mean you have to change your worldview. It might mean you start doing things differently. It might mean, you know, your circle of friends is going to change. Your interests will change. So a lot of people don't want to embrace knowledge because of the fear of change. But those who embrace it, they're blessed.
Indeed.
Thanks.
So, my brother, you've been to 60 countries.
No, not me. That's Sam Cleveland. He usually calls up about 8 o'clock and does about 5 minutes.
Okay.
You know, lets people know where in one of the countries he's been in. But the church in Africa, the one that's in the ground. I'm in love with the picture of it, but can you give us some historical aspect on that?
Well, right now I worry about how Christianity is being used in Africa. I think you have these prosperity churches and a bunch of really basically pimps in the pulpit, just like you have here.
Okay.
And the people who seem to be most overwhelmed by it are poor people who don't have much. I guess people who are looking for heaven or life after. And so a lot of you have a lot of ministers in Africa right now who are evangelical, who are just really exploiting a lot of people. But Africa also has a very, very ancient Christian tradition. The country of Ethiopia in particular may be the oldest Christian nation in the world. It's either Ethiopia or Armenia. People argue back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But you have in northern Ethiopia a place called Lalibela. And Lalibela has, I think, 13 churches carved out of the rock, carved out of the earth. And the most spectacular one is called Beta George's, or the Church of St. George. And it's the local people don't believe humans built it. They believe it was built by angels. Mm. But the archaeologists say that it's about 700 years old, and it's a church carved out of the living earth. And I've been to it 3-4 times. It's really, really spectacular. So that's important to point out, again, because we talk about Egypt a lot, but we don't want to think Egypt or even Mali are the only civilizations in Africa. In fact, you could say that civilization in Africa was continent-wide. Let's go to another place in North Africa. Let's go to the country of Tunisia. And Tunisia is the site of the ancient civilization called Carthage. And, of course, the most famous person in the history of Carthage was Hannibal, the original Hannibal, not Hannibal Lecter, the original Hannibal. That's an African civilization, yeah, that challenged the Romans for hundreds of years. Hannibal was a great military strategist.
Mm-hmm.
And then in southern Africa, in the country we call Zimbabwe, you have the remains of an ancient series of stone cities there, 800 or 1,000 years old. If you go to West Africa in what is now Nigeria, you have a civilization called Nok, N-O-K. You have one called Benin and Ife. You know, so civilization, Africa is rich in civilization. Now, I put a lot of emphasis on Africa because it's my belief that until Africa is strong, no black people anywhere in the world will be strong and will be respected. So Africa needs us, and we need Africa. But in order to build that bond, we have to begin to get African Americans to develop a newfound sense of pride in Africa. And so instead of running from Africa, you're going to be wanting to run to it. Now, when I was very young, before I told you how I was exposed to Malcolm and Marcus Garvey, et cetera, when I was very young, if you had called me an African, those were like fighting words. What?
Yeah.
You know, even the word black, I rejected that. And then once I began to find out about it, everything changed. Now, if you say I'm not an African, you have a real problem. It used to be if you called me an African, we had a problem. Now, if you say I'm not an African, I'm upset and my feelings are hurt because I've gone full circle. And I would like for all of us to have that mentality. Now, we come from Africa. We are African people living in America. and our future is linked with Africa, just like you have Jewish people mm-hmm. in the United States but are bonded to Israel, and they see a relationship with Israel, and they will fight for Israel. Well, African Americans have to develop that same kind of relationship with Africa and to believe that what happens in Africa matters to us. And Africans on the continent must have that same attitude, that we are the children of Africa. And, you know, we need some love from our mother. So history, again, can address all of those kinds of issues if you teach it properly. But never start with slavery. Never minimize the suffering of our ancestors. But we want to emphasize that we did more than suffer. We fought back. And we are still a great and mighty people because we survived that. Now it's time to move forward.
Absolutely.
With you referring, you know, Jews to Israel and, you know, us to Africa, like Israel, like flies their people in for free. You know what I mean? Like they're a little bit more engaged with their people. Like I would love to see that, you know what I mean? Coming from African nations in regards to us here.
You make a good point. Israel gets something like $50 billion in foreign aid from the United States.
Yeah,
true.
So Israel doesn't have a lot of natural resources, but it's a wealthy little country in the middle of the desert. Africa, on the other hand, is very, very rich in natural resources, but the people in Africa, for the most part, are desperately poor. So we have to change that situation. For example, there's plenty of opportunities to go to the motherland and develop a business. You know, there's money to be made there. Africa is very, very, very wealthy in terms of natural resources, and it's beautiful, and there's land aplenty. And you can live in Africa comfortably for a much smaller portion of money than you would in the United States. So we have to begin to change the mindset of Africa and ourselves, and that's going to take time. Now, one of the things that is most frustrating is we want to do all of this today. We want to do it yesterday, and that's not fast enough. But it's going to take time, whether you like it or not. I don't care how bad you are. You can't do it by yourself. And you have to prepare yourselves for generations of struggle. So it's going to take time, and you can't do it alone. What does that mean? We have to learn to work together. You know, I think in the empowerment of African people, black power, freedom, liberation, whatever you want to call it, is easy as long as somebody else is doing all of the work. If it's not too far, if it's not too hot, if you're not too tired, if you like the people, if it's not going to cost anything, if the game ain't on, all of that stuff. In other words, liberation and empowerment for our people is not a priority. It's something we do when it's convenient. And we will never be free, when, you know, if that's the result. Now, we also have to be prepared to make sacrifices. We don't have to go in these businesses in our community, you know, the nail salons, the stores where our people are exploited mostly by Asians, the gas stations, the liquor stores, the nail salons. We don't have to go in these places and give these people our money who disrespect us. See, we have to be willing to even make the smallest sacrifices to be able to spend money with other black people, even sometimes when the service is frustrating. If we're serious about being a strong and mighty people again, being respected again, we have to do basic things. I'm of the belief, and a lot of people get mad at me when I say this, that black men need to be with black women. Here's a brother who is racially profiled from cradle to grave. When you walk in the store, the security guard looks at you like you're going to steal something. You're usually the last one to get the job, typically the first one to get fired from the job when there's a layoff, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Usually even the first one to get killed in the movies. And yet when it comes to picking a mate, a lot of times the brothers say, I don't see color, I don't see race, I couldn't help it. I was walking down the street, and Cupid shot me with an arrow, and I fell in love with this blonde white woman. I can't take people like that seriously, man. See, you can't be black when it's convenient. You got to be willing to stand up. And look, that's important. The person that is by your side, the person you choose to live your life with. I mean, what more important statement can you make than that? And you're not going to get a black woman when there's so many beautiful sisters out there just looking for a good brother? Take down that image of white Jesus. Be more active in your child's education. Instead of getting the latest pair of Air Jordans or weave, invest some money in a math or science tutor for your child. So you can blame white folks all day long if that makes you feel good. But it's up to you to dig yourself out of the hole. And if you're not going to do that, then you know nobody's going to respect you. And stop using the N-word. Don't do that. And stop justifying it. You know, we don't have to degrade ourselves. And a lot of times we degrade ourselves. So if you call yourself the N-word, how are you going to get mad when somebody else does it? If you shoot your brother in the street, how are you going to get mad when a white cop shoots you? You don't have the moral high ground to do that. So we have to cleanse our communities. And the way you begin to cleanse your community is to cleanse your mind. And the way you begin to cleanse your mind is to begin to read, begin to study, expose yourself to new things, and see what other people have done that made them successful. So that's just a few things I wanted to share with you all.
Yeah, I got some steps to go. I'm a baby.
We got a lot of steps.
We got work to do, man.
You know, I need to look at myself in the mirror here and there. You know, but we live in this society and we're impacted by it. But we have to begin to recognize these things. And I'll say one other thing: we have to be able to talk to each other. You don't have to have the last word. You don't have to be right all the time. We don't have to shout at each other and curse each other. But we have to be able to talk to each other and listen to each other with tolerance and respect, and I dare say it, love. Sisters have told me that all my life in terms of relationship. Renoka Rashidi, the most important thing in a relationship is communication, for us to be able to talk to each other. Now, my situation is I have a temper, so I don't want to hear it, and I'll get mad, and I'll walk off, and I'll say, F it. That's not healthy. That doesn't work either. We have to be willing to have some humility and put our egos down and just listen to each other. And that's not always easy because we're taught as black men in this country, we got to be tough.
Very true.
Man, they be wrong sometimes too, though. They don't want to admit it. Just saying.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, of course.
A lot.
Man, that's a whole other episode right there.
Well, you know, we're also under a lot of pressure, you know, on different levels. And we live in a stressful environment. People got a lot of issues. But a lot of those issues, as I say, we've carried from generation to generation and don't know it. Do you know one of the things about slavery that used to happen is they had what was called breeding farms. You ever heard of that?
Yes.
Slavery was abolished at a certain point in time. So theoretically, you couldn't bring any more slaves, any more captives over here. So in order to continue your labor force, you know, you would force sometimes family members, you know, to procreate and produce a child. In Senegal, I'm taking a group to Senegal in West Africa in January, you have what is called infant dungeons. And these were dungeons literally for children. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment, because a lot of people don't know what the enslavement process was like. So let's just go over that for a minute. And then, you know, if you want, I'll let you go. For hundreds of years, our ancestors were hunted like animals in a forest. And they were captured and they were marched to the coast of Africa. That's where most of the enslaved Africans died. From the time they were captured to the time they were marched to the coast, where they were put in the dungeons. Okay? And the men, the women, and children would be separated. Many of the women, perhaps most of them, would be violated by the slave owners, the slave catchers. It could be your wife, your mother, your sister, whatever. And a lot of the men were raped too.
Right.
So the men, the women, and children are separated. And you're in a filthy hole. I've seen these places. You've been branded with a hot iron like an animal. You got chains on your feet and your hands. In these places, there are no toilets, no electricity, no air conditioning. And this is for the brothers. Now, you can only imagine what happened to the women, and we cannot protect them. But on Gori Island in Senegal, you had a dungeon for children. Now, I want you to think about that for a moment. In the background, you can hear your child screaming, "Daddy, where are you? I'm afraid. This man is hurting me. Daddy, I'm cold. I'm hungry." And this went on for hundreds of years. And then you were put on the ship. And this voyage might last for several weeks. You might have 300 people on a crowded ship in layers. Let's say you have layers of three, let's say you have six layers of 50 people on each layer.
Mm-hmm.
No toilets, no air conditioning, people packed together like sardines in a can. Imagine being a part of that. Imagine being on the bottom of that. Imagine the blood and the feces and the urine and the rats. And then you are taken through the enslavement process. And how could you not be fucked up from all that? And that lasts for hundreds of years. It's deep in our psyche.
Right.
So, yeah, we are crazy and we do some crazy shit because not only are we under pressure, but we have not been able to heal from that. You've never been able to step back and say, let me catch my breath. Let me heal. Let me think about what happened to me. We've never had that luxury. If you have a shooting at a school or a church, and it happens all the time now, as soon as it's over, you're going to have psychiatrists come in, therapists, psychologists. You're going to have people who walk you through that horrific experience. But we as a people have never had therapy. We've never been able to come together and heal. And so in addition to all the other pressures that we have, not having enough money, being in a housing situation, a relationship, et cetera, that's a challenge to you. And then on top of that, you got all those suppressed and repressed memories in your psyche. And these are the reasons that we do the crazy things we do and we strike out against each other a lot of times because we haven't healed, that we are barely wounded people. And that's going to take a lot of time and it's going to take a lot of patience and you have to be prepared to deal with it. And it ain't easy.
Yeah, and I think people have an unrealistic expectation. I think you kind of touched on it earlier, of other black folks. You know, like you just slid out the womb with your black fist raised. No, you did dumb shit too. You know, like we got to stop judging each other, man. I agree with you so much when you said that. That's just this is turn off to me.
No, we have to have a lot more patience for each other. Like for example. If you go to a black business and the service is not what you expect, a lot of times a person will say, I'm never going to do business with another black person again because we don't have patience with each other. But you'll go back to McDonald's and you'll go back to Burger King and Popeyes even if they gave you the wrong order because we just don't see the world like that. You know that old expression, white folks' ice is colder than black people's ice. I don't know if you all have ever heard that or not, but you know, we have a love affair with white folks.
I mean, we're going to be honest about it, man. We love white supremacy, and we just don't want to admit that shit. You know, tell me I ain't going to be without Wi-Fi for a week. I am crushed. We got a problem.
Yeah, you might have sympathy with Colin Kaepernick, but chances are you're going to watch the game anyway, okay? Because we're conditioned to do. There's a great man in our history in the United States named Carter G. Woodson, and he's more or less the founder of Negro History Week, which became Black History Month. He wrote a lot of books, including a book called Miseducation of the Negro. And he said, if you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his actions. If you can program this person, they'll do whatever you want them to do, and you don't even have to be there. You just give them the right stimulus, and you got them in your pocket.
And it's man, that's so damn true.
It's
evident today, you know. But I love hearing about, you know, like what it was like in Africa, you know, like back in the day. You know, I truly, somebody going to have to Mr. T me and put me to sleep so I can get there. But before I leave it, you know, the physical, I definitely want to make it over there.
Well, it's not that difficult.
It's not as
expensive as some people think. You just have to make up your mind that's what you're going to do. Just like with anything major in life, you just have to make it a priority, and before you know it. I mean, it's a real healing experience. Believe me, it is. I've been to Africa, I don't know, maybe 50, 60 times now. I'm going next month, and I'm going in November, and I'm going back again in January and February. So for me, it's like a way of life, and I embrace it. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, man. That is just crazy. I wish I could.
Well, look, I don't
want
to keep you guys all night, man. If you have a question or something, I'd be happy to do it. But otherwise, I'm glad that we were able to spend some time together, and, you know, I look forward to continuing our conversation.
I got a question.
Go ahead, bro.
I do got a question. Do you feel that for us as black people that we all should do DNA testing as far as to find out, you know, exactly what, where we're from?
Well, that's a personal thing. To me, that's like religion. That's personal. And I think for those who want to do it and who feel like it's important to them, they should. You know, I know some people just have done it and they're so excited and so gratified by the results they got. But for me, I've never done it and I've never really been that serious about it. Maybe the only good thing that came out of the transatlantic slave trade, that horrible crime against humanity, is because since most of us in the United States, African Americans, don't know exactly what part of Africa we come from, we feel entitled to claim the whole continent. And that's me. Africa is 11 million square miles. So I don't want part of it. I want the whole thing. So it's enough for me just to be able to know that I'm African, that I come from Africa, and that's plenty for me. But for those who want to do the DNA testing, I think it's a great thing. Now, I also brought up, I said to me it's like religion, because I get a lot of questions. One of the questions is, what religion did African people practice before slavery? Or sometimes people even ask me my personal religion, or they want to know what I think of Christianity or what I think of this or what I think of that. To me, I tend to judge people not based on the God they say they worship, but how they live their lives. And so Malcolm X said, when we come together, we put our religion in the closet. Otherwise, we'll never unite.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
That's some real shit right there, man. Well, I definitely want to thank you, man, for your time, your wisdom, your energy, man. And yeah, we definitely going to have to build in the future. And I'm going to have to take one of them tours, man. I know my wife would love it. I sure would. But it just, we'll talk about it tonight. Yeah.
Look, let me just, as I leave, because I hear my gardener, I hear all this noise in the background. Again, a person can reach me at area code 323-803-8663 or renoco@hotmail.com. You brothers stay strong. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to another conversation real soon. Have a great evening.
No, man. Thank you.
You as well.
You have a good one, too. All right, and actually, we got, oh, that's you with the ocean in the background. We got Camp Cleveland in the, oh, okay. We got Camp Cleveland in the building, too. Let's get him on. What's good, bro?
Hey, what's up, Nah?
Yeah, he just got off the air, too, man. I'm sure you heard.
Oh, no, I was listening in.
Oh, okay. What's good, bro? How you doing, man? How's life?
All is well, man. Everything going good. The show, man, it was fire, man. Y'all had a master teacher on the line.
Yeah, that was pretty dope, man. That was pretty dope. I'm not even going to front, man. And shout out to Koya Faye. Because that was a hell of a plug. I definitely appreciate that, man. But you already know. So what you got, man? You got Brazil today?
Yeah, definitely. Start it off. Can you hear me?
Oh yeah. And hey, Rome, I'm gonna mute you so we can let
yeah,
you shine on without the. All right, bet. All right, go ahead, bro.
All right, Brazil, that's a country that I actually lived in. I studied abroad out there, and I got the opportunity to stay with a Brazilian family. And for people that don't know, Brazil, that's the largest country in South America. It's also the largest Latin American country. Brazil is the fifth largest country in the world as far as land mass, and it's the fifth largest country as far as population. So it's over 200 million people living in Brazil. And although Brazil has a very diverse population, the majority of the people, 97 million or 50.7% of the population, define themselves as black, or mixed mm-hmm. with black. Brazil is believed to have the largest population of African ancestry outside of Africa as far as a single country. Brazil also has the largest population of Latinos in the world. Brazil was the last country that actually outlawed slavery, and that was in 1888. So that was maybe roughly 20 years after the Civil War ended. And in comparison, okay, say in the United States, we had like the Underground Railroad where a lot mm-hmm. of slaves, they would escape to Canada or they would go to Mexico or they would even try to just go to the northern part of the country. But in Brazil, they did it a little differently. When they would run away, they would build villages, you know, for only ex-slaves and runaway slaves, and it was called quilombo. So, you know, they would grow food, they would stack weapons and have families. And many of the times they was left undisturbed, but sometimes they would get raided and the whites would try to, you know, burn down the place and re-enslave the people, you know, or whatnot. And that went on for decades. Brazilians are known for being some of the most beautiful people in the world. Brazil is known for some of the greatest fighters in the world. Brazil is known for bull riding. They have one of the largest population of cows in the world. They're known for having the best soccer players, Pele, the greatest soccer player, Anderson Silva, the greatest, one of the greatest mixed martial artists. Brazil is known for Brazilian jiu-jitsu. They're known for capoeira. So capoeira, that's like a martial art form, and it was developed by Africans that were kidnapped and brought to Brazil, and it specifically from Angola. So capoeira is not only just a martial art form, but it's a dance. So what made it effective was the black Brazilians, they would play music and they would dance in order to deceive slave masters. You know, that might be just passing by them. I'm like, oh, they just dancing or they having fun or whatever. But they really practiced how to kick, how to duck, how to, you know, slip punches and different things like that. And, you know, it was the what they used to create a lot of revolts. So they even banned it. They made it illegal even after slavery was over with. It was a law that they made. Like if somebody got caught doing it, if they proved that you was practicing it, you could go to jail or, you know, you could get in big trouble for it. And in comparison to the United States, Brazil took more Africans from Africa to Brazil than any other country in the Americas. So roughly they took about 40% of the slaves that were stolen from Africa. So that's about 4 million people. So that's just including the ones that survived the Middle Passages, survived the 2-3 months walk to the coast, survived the slave dungeons. But the United States took about 5%, so only about half a million. So it's about four times as many black people in Brazil than it is in America. Let me see. Brazil is famous for the Amazon.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the clubs like, bro? You got to tell us that before you do.
Oh no, it's cool. They party every day, all night. They have more because it's so hot. There a lot of parties is outside and on the block and in the community and in the neighborhood. They do have clubs, nightclubs though. But you can all. They party every day.
Block parties? That's dope. And Rome, you live now too, man. Just so you know, I don't hear that wind either.
Hey, man, hey, I, too, once studied abroad. You should have Brazilian in the head. You know what I'm saying? But we was Brazilian.
Hey, man, that's fire, though, man. That's some hell of information, too, man. I did not know a lot of that shit, to be quite honest. I didn't know it was the fifth largest country in the world. 200 million people, goddamn. Like, that's what? That's more than half of the states as far as population. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think they do. They I'm not sure. Do they have like abortion clinics in Brazil? Because I know that has decimated our numbers here.
You can get a whole. I'm
not making a call either way. I don't inbox me no crazy shit. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I honestly, I don't know if abortion is illegal or not in Brazil.
I'm not sure.
And you know the crazy part is, man. Go ahead, bro.
You know how many people go to Brazil to get black market surgery, bro? Like, I'm pretty sure somebody's, doing abortions in the alley somewhere.
I'm pretty sure it could happen, but it's a totally different thing. Like, when you got to go through that extent to get it done, as opposed to you can just go somewhere and a doctor will do it.
Yeah, true. That's true.
You know, you got to think about shit. Like, you might not make it back from that alley.
Right.
You know, and you typically don't think like that going to the doctor, even though the same is true, just not in the same numbers.
That's true.
A lot of women that go to the islands, man, to go get them surgeries, man. I know a couple people who, you know, knew some people who died from some bot surgeries or whatnot that they got overseas somewhere.
I mean, because it's a hell of a lot cheaper. Like, from my understanding, there's a lot of people, like, on the Mexican border that go to dentists in Mexico because they can just pay out of pocket, and it's way cheaper. And so now they got, like, American dentists on the other side, you know. They made a whole little industry over there.
Right.
You know, so... And like you, like when he was talking about, when Camp was talking about Cuba the last time, like I literally talked to my wife about that shit, like that. But the Wi-Fi, like that Wi-Fi shit, man, that's a problem.
Yo, I can't, like, I have to go by myself. I can't go with a female companion. Like, it's just gonna kind of ruin it for me. So.
Yeah, but you go by yourself, man. You can't speak the language. You're just sitting there looking stupid.
I'm. Money talk, bro. Make sure I'm bagged. You know what I'm saying? I'm bagged up. Somebody gonna let me know where to go.
Oh, that's true. Hey, I'm pretty sure Camp will take you down there.
Oh yeah, let me know when you're ready, King.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh hey, and you know what, man? I think we're gonna shut it down a little early today, man. I'm kind of like that. After the Brazil talk, what you think, Rome? You got some shit to talk about, man. After the King, you know, and then the Brazil information. I'm like, shit. I kind of know what I. That was, you know, I'm feeling good about it. You know, I'm feeling really good.
I
kind of want to go.
You want to celebrate?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Hey, I got you.
And you know, man, I will say that he was a lot more laid back than I anticipated.
The only thing I really was counting in my head how many times I said nigga today. You know what I'm saying? When he said that shit. Like, I was like, this nigga talking about, I was like, he must have listened to the show before. You know what I mean?
I was like, yeah, we got a long way to go, bro. But you know what? It's dope being able to like oh, and that one picture, dog, I'm telling you, you gotta see the picture of him with the what did he call it? The Omec head.
Yeah.
That's fucking dope. You gotta, hey Camp, you need to reach out to him too, man. Cause he say he's trying to pass that information on, bro.
Okay.
You know, and I know you the cat that'd be like, okay, where we gonna meet at, and actually be there.
Right. I think he said he's going to Africa next month. I'm gonna be in Egypt in November, and I'm gonna be in Ghana in October.
Oh,
that's beautiful,
yeah.
Man.
That is, man. Hey, bring some coffee mugs back from Ghana.
Yeah, about to bring something back, man.
I'll slide you the cheese.
Okay.
You know.
Okay,
but shit, man, we about to shut it down, man. I definitely appreciate everybody that tuned in today, tomorrow, whenever. You already know, man. I ain't gonna go through the whole spiel because we gotta cancel the water cooler tomorrow. We'll bring it back. It would definitely be back next Friday, no doubt. But you know, if we can work out something this weekend, we will. If not, you know, it is what it is. Some days, you know, you just gotta do what you gotta do. You know,
all right.
Any shout outs? Let them know how to get in touch with you, bro.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Cam Cleveland on Instagram, CampCleveland. And on Facebook, it's Cam Cleveland, too.
It's more than just Cam Cleveland, though, bro. Like, I didn't even notice that. I didn't know that to the day. You got other pages that's popping, too, man. Shout out to other pages, man. Come on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got Cam Cleveland Worldwide Travel Tours, and I got Happy Black History Month 365. And Little
yeah,
After,
man. Talk,
little after
talk,
the Food Collaborative.
Yeah, talk that shit, bro. Let them know. Rome, what you
yeah.
got, man?
You know, shout out to Rena Gangsters. Shout out Keys Development. Shout out everybody was on. Everybody came on. Everybody listening. Moderators, everybody, man. You know, we love y'all. Appreciate you. And I'll add it. Until I make something happen Saturday. If not, then it's next week. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, everybody be safe. Stay black. I'll add it.
All right, no doubt. And don't forget to check out the websites, man, mrochelle.com and myskinismysin.net. Yo, subscribe to the YouTube channel, man. Like, every time we get to 600, somebody just unsubscribes. Like, that's the – come on, man. Just ignore the unsubscribe button. Don't do that. You know, we right at 600. You know, we need to be at, like, 100,000, but 600 is dope. But that's the My Skin Is My Sin YouTube channel, man. Check us out on Instagram. My Skin Is My Sin number one. It's the same thing on Twitter. On Facebook, it's My Skin Is My Sin. Pretty much Google our shit, man, and you'll find it. All right, man. Definitely appreciate you. Koya, no doubt. I owe you big time. Appreciate you. And we out. Y'all have a good one. Peace.
Peace.